If you're looking for more success in life, be it in your property investments, with wealth or money management, today's episode of my podcast is for you. I'm going to share two sessions with you. In the first one, I'm going to discuss 21 reasons why many people are terrible at managing money. And even if you've got your finances under control, I bet you're going to learn something from the lessons I want to share. And then I'm going to be chatting with Brett Warren, National Director of Metropole Property Strategists, about something very interesting he found when he sat down with potential clients of Metropole. He realized that their homes often perform better than their investment properties. I'm going to ask him why. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
I'd like to share with you a number of lessons why you're possibly terrible at managing money. Now, Morgan Housel, who's one of my favorite authors about money and about finance, wrote a column, it was quite a number of years ago, on fool.com. He now writes for the Collaborative Fund, and I really think you should read his regular columns. But in this column on fool.com, he explained why people usually get better with things over time, but there's something about money that gets the better of us, and it doesn't seem that for most Australians, we get better with it. It's one of those areas in life where a lot of us seem to get progressively dumber. Anyway, he outlined 77 reasons we're awful at managing money. I'm not going to go through all those with you, but if you allow me, I'd like to go through 21 of the favourites that I got. Now, the first one is something called the Dunninger-Kruger effect that people suffer from. It's lacking enough basic financial knowledge to even realize that you're making a mistake. People's lack of understanding about things like compounding interest and inflation can lead to them believing that they can make good financial decisions when in reality they're tripping over themselves about failure. So I agree that Australia's lack of financial fluency is one of the reasons we're awful at managing money. That's one of the reasons I run this podcast. And if you, when you listen to this, know somebody else who's going to benefit from learning about managing money better, tell them about the podcast and help them improve as well. The second of the reasons Morgan Housel said we're terrible at managing money is because for every dollar increase you get in your salary, your desire, how you want to live, increases by $2 or more. And that's the sort of ripple effect upwards that happens. You want to buy a better car. You want to live in a better home. You actually don't save more because you're earning more. You tend to spend even more than you earn. So, yes, there are a number of reasons why we tend to be awful with money, about managing our money. And the third reason is you spend lots of money on material stuff to impress other people without realizing those other people couldn't even care less about you. You'd be shocked at how few people care what you've done or how pretty your clothes are or how much noise your car makes. Yet if you look at Instagram or Facebook or TikTok, sure, you think that that's how the world revolves. The fourth lesson I'd like to share with you about bad money management is you've never been able to predict what the market's going to do next, but this doesn't deter a lot of Australians from trying to predict what the market's going to do next. So they try and time the property market when the experts can't get it. And boy, am I seeing people trying to time Bitcoin at the moment or the stock market. So we're terrible at timing the market, but it doesn't stop us trying to. The fifth lesson from Morgan Housel was we get upset when we hear on TV how the government is running at a deficit. We're hearing that the government keeps borrowing money and overcommitting themselves, but it doesn't bother the average person that despite they hear that on TV, they've actually bought the TV on a credit card that they couldn't even afford, and they're borrowing money on Afterpay and running their lives in deficit. Another reason we're terrible at managing money is that the single largest expense, the most people will ever pay in life is interest. Yet they're going to spend more money on interest over time than on food, on vacations, on alcohol, on schools, on clothes, on dinners out, and all forms of entertainment. And that's because they buy things on their credit card where the interest rates are very high and they don't pay it off every month. So borrowing and paying interest for appreciating assets like residential real estate, that's a good thing because it's actually earning more to pay a residential loan at 2.5-3% when the property's going up 5-8% a year and the rent's coming in as well and you're getting a combined income of 10%. That's easy. But to buy something and not pay off your credit card and pay 17-18% interest, that's where people run into find trouble. So another problem with credit cards is that they're thrilled that the credit card that they're paying that 22% interest on offers them a 1% cashback on their purchases or gives them frequent flyer points or gives them other points. They're not financially literate. Another issue is that people work in a stressful job in order to make enough money to have a stress-free life. But they don't see the irony in this. They're working in a stressful job in order to make enough money not to have stress. Funny about that. Another issue is that you're a pessimist in a world where far more people wake up in the morning trying to make things better than wake up thinking we're all doomed. Yet those people who are pessimistic, and boy do I have them trolling me on the internet, on YouTube in particular, seeing the world is going to fall apart, they're not enjoying their lives. And it's optimists who are successful in this world, not pessimists. So how do you think about the world? Do you think about the world as a glass half full or a glass half empty? Another reason that you could be bad with money is because you're trying to keep up with the Joneses without realizing that the Joneses are buried in debt and they're probably never going to get out of the quagmire of their debt as well. So don't worry what other people are doing. Just look after yourself. Another issue is that you associate all your financial success with skill and all your financial failures with bad luck. These are some great points Morgan Housel came up with. In other words, if something goes right, you think, gee, I was smart. I bought the property at the right time. I bought those shares at the right time of the cycle. I actually got the thing right with Bitcoin. But when things go wrong, it's never your fault. It's always the market's fault, the government's fault, the change in interest rate, my boss's fault. Yes, you've heard me say before, you've got to be the pilot of your life. You've got to be in charge. You've got to take responsibility for all the things that go right and all the things that go wrong. So as we work through this list of, well, I'm giving you 21 of the 70-something reasons that Morgan Housel came up with. Another one was rather than admitting and learning from your mistakes, you ignore them. You bury them, you make excuses for them, and you blame them on others. That goes back to what I said a moment ago about taking responsibility. Of course, another great one is you say you're going to be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy, but in fact, it doesn't work that way. So when the property market goes down, as it did at the beginning of COVID, or when the share market goes down, it's really hard to make a decision to take a commitment and actually take a stance and add to your property portfolio or your share portfolio when everyone's saying the opposite. But look how well those people who got into property did a year or two ago when the market was down. Look how much better it is today. So saying you're going to be greedy when others are fearful are easy to say, but it isn't easy to do. The 14th lesson from Morgan Housel was you let confirmation bias take control of your mind by only seeking out information from other sources that agree with your pre-existing belief. Boy, do I see that a lot. So if you believe cash flow positive properties are good, the right way to grow your property portfolio, your wealth, and you know that I don't agree with that, but if you believe that and you do a Google search, you will find lots of people who will say the same. And the more you search those things, Google will take you down the rabbit warren of continuing looking for things along those lines. So that's why we believe at Metropole you should really start your investment journey with a strategic plan that doesn't care about Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, about this suburb or that suburb, about houses or apartments. It's actually deciding where you are now, where you want to be, and then what you've got to do to get there, where you are along the journey at the moment, and is it going to get you to where you want to get to? So rather than looking for something to confirm your preconceived ideas, actually have an independent factual plan and then implementing the plan. So confirmation bias is one of the big issues a lot of us have got. I mean, it happens in all areas. You know, I think Apple is better than Samsung phones. My best friend has always been a contrarian and he's been using Samsung and he can give me all the arguments why they're better and I can show you all the discussions I've had and the blogs I've read about why Apple's better. Happens with football teams. And similarly, if you've got a preconceived idea about how things should be or going to be with regard to investment, your confirmation bias will take hold and affect you as well. Another mistake, another reason that you're terrible with money, according to Morgan Housel, is that you think you're too young to start saving for retirement when every day that passes makes that magic of compounding interest a little bit less effective. I know years ago when superannuation wasn't compulsory and I set up a superannuation fund in my late 20s, I think it was, and I was getting a bit bored with it and it wasn't making much money and it didn't have much in it. And I said to my accountant, "Hey, Stan, I don't need that. That's 40, 50 years away. I just want to take out my super balance," because you couldn't those days because it wasn't compulsory. And he said, "No, Michael, pay attention, listen to me." And I thought I was too young then. I've made a lot of these mistakes as well. But boy, am I very pleased with the huge amount of assets I have in my super fund today because I started early. Another lesson, according to Morgan Housel, is you're investing for the next 50 years, but you get stressed out when the market is having a bad day, a bad week, a bad month. Never make long-term decisions based on the last 30 minutes of news. Never make 30, 40, 50-year decisions made on the last 30, 40, 50 days of news even. So don't get stressed if you recognise in the long term property values around Australia, well-located property values have kept increasing. Of course, there's going to be ups and downs along the way. So the short-term trends may be down, but the long-term trend, if you own the right assets, is up. So don't worry. If you've got long-term horizon, don't get stressed by the short-term. By the way, successful investors have a long-term horizon. While the average Australian worries about what they're going to do this weekend and most investors worry about what's going to happen in the next year or two, mega millionaires, deca millionaires, they think about what's going to happen in 30, 40 years' time. As we're getting close to the end of these lessons from Morgan Housel, another one is that you don't respect the idea that do nothing are two of the most powerful words in investing. Yes, sometimes the right thing to do is nothing. It may be the wrong time of the cycle, or maybe you don't have enough money. I've seen that recently as the market's gone up, people are buying secondary properties because they haven't got enough to buy a good property. They would have been better off doing nothing. The 18th lesson is you feel especially smart after last year's market rally when the market's done really well, realizing it had nothing to do with you at all. You had nothing to do with how well the market did. It did well because of all the fundamentals and probably not because of anything that you did or the timing. The 19th lesson I'd like to share with you is Morgan Housel said you seek advice from a doctor to manage your health, an accountant to do your taxes, a lawyer to manage your legal problems, a plumber to fix your plumbing, a builder to build your house, a trainer to help you exercise, a dentist to fix your teeth, a pilot to fly when you travel. You wouldn't consider doing it differently, he said. Then, with no experience at all, you go about willy-nilly investing in property or shares or something, these big expenses all by yourself. Boy, does that one make sense? And it's one of the reasons that people fail. On your own, it's impertinent to think you could do as well as, for example, my team at Metropole, who've had a number of decades of experience with most of the people. We've been involved in over $4.5 billion worth of property. So if you chose to use us to help you build your property portfolio, it would all start by putting a plan together to help you plan to become the person you plan to become, know exactly where you're heading, and then help you implement the plan using our buyer's agent or our renovations or development team or property management or financial planning. So why not go to metropole.com.au, find out a bit about what we do, and get the right team on your side, one that's independent, one that's unbiased. Now, the last of the 21 lessons I was going to share with you is that thinking the financial news is published because it's useful information that you need to know. It's not. In reality, it's published only because the publisher knows you're going to read it. In other words, they've already sold the space to advertisers, and that's why the clickbait headlines are getting you in. So don't think the Financial News Network is on your side. Alec, I said I was going to give you 21 reasons that you're bad with money. We're all bad with money, Australians are. But let me give you two bonuses. The one is you forget the single most valuable asset you have as an investor is time. A 20-year-old has an asset that Warren Buffett couldn't dream of. So if you're still young and you've got time on your side and you've got a long runway, take advantage of it. And the last lesson I want to share with you is that you've probably nodded along to all of these points without realizing I'm talking to you. So there you have it from Morgan Housel in that great article in Fool.com, 21 reasons why you're terrible at managing money.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In today's Mindset Moment, I'd like to share with you a story from one of my mentors, Jim Rohn. And Jim Rohn was a great storyteller. And he often mentioned the concept that over the years, he had been teaching children about a simple but powerful concept, the ant philosophy. Jim Rohn said he thought everybody should study ants because they've got an amazing four-part philosophy. Now, here's the first part of the ant philosophy. They never quit. Now, that's a good philosophy. If they're headed somewhere and you try and stop them, they'll look for another way. They'll climb over, they'll climb under, they'll climb around. They'll keep looking for another way. What a neat philosophy to never quit looking for another way to get where you're supposed to go. Now, the second part of the ants' philosophy, according to Jim Rohn, was that they think winter all summer. Now, that's an important perspective. You can't be so naive to think summer is going to last forever. So ants are gathering their winter food in the middle of summer. An ancient story says, don't build your house on sand in the summer. Why do you need this advice? Because it's important to be realistic. In the summer, you've got to think storm. You've got to think rocks as you enjoy the sand and the sun. Think ahead. Now, the third part of the ant philosophy is that ants think summer or winter. Now, that's important. During the winter, ants remind themselves, this won't last long. We'll soon be out of here. And on the first warm day, ants are out. And as it turns cold again, they'll dive back down. But then they come out on the first warm day, and they can't wait to get out. Now, here's the fourth part of the ant philosophy, according to Jim Rohn. How much will an ant gather during the summer to prepare for the winter? All he possibly can. What an incredible philosophy, the all you possibly can philosophy. Now, that's a great seminar to attend, isn't it? The ant seminar. Never give up. Look ahead, stay positive, and do all you can. Thanks for that great lesson, Jim Rohn. My business partner, Brett Warren, wrote an interesting blog recently explaining what he found when he spoke to potential clients at Metropole, people who are already existing homeowners and also owned one or two investment properties. And he found that while often their homes had performed strongly, growing significantly in value, in many cases, the investment properties have struggled and in some cases fallen behind in growth. So I'd like to ask Brett, why does this happen so frequently? Hello, Brett.
Hi, Michael. Good to be with you.
Now, Brett, I know you were looking at the statistics of the success of some of the people you were seeing who were wanting to become clients of Metropole, and you had a look backwards at how their properties had been performing, how their homes had been performing, and you found something very interesting.
I did, Michael, and it's continued to happen more and more. It actually happened this morning with a potential client as well. And I guess more specifically, Michael, those who are, I guess, existing homeowners and potentially have one or two investment properties that we're seeing. And what I'm noticing is that on most occasions, their home has actually performed strongly and performed okay. But it's been their investment properties that have really struggled and unfortunately in many cases, and they've fallen behind. And it really got to me thinking is, you know, why does this happen so frequently?
So what are your thoughts behind it? Now, let's be fair. These aren't clients of Metropole, but people who are coming along as you regularly see people wanting to. And part of what you do is you actually fix what they've done before any way we help them. We actually help improve the situation if they can, and we actually prevent them making mistakes. So our job isn't really to sell them a property because we never have at Metropole, but actually to help people grow, protect, and pass on their wealth. So there's a number of facets to it. But what do you think was behind all this?
It's a good question. And look, in my opinion, there's obviously many, many factors to consider when buying a property, as you mentioned. But I think many investors appear to overlook some of the real basic fundamentals. They go into things looking for maybe, you know, tax benefits or cash flow or one thing or the other, and they're just taking their eye off the ball a little bit. But interestingly enough, it's those exact same fundamentals I was just speaking about that most investors have first and foremost in their mind when they buy a home. But for some reason, they take a different approach when they're investing.
Isn't that funny? So what are they? What are the ones you're thinking about?
Just really basic things, Michael. So the first thing is, I think this applies with every investment, whether it's property, shares, pretty much anything, but it really comes back to supply and demand. And I know it's something we look at extensively. We're looking to buy in locations where demand substantially outweighs supply. In the Australian market, it is our capital cities, and more specifically the Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne markets, the inner to middle rings where there's huge employment growth, there's huge employment hubs as well, creating those jobs. There's pretty much zero lack of land. There's no new land. There's no new parcels of land to be developed or anything like that. So I know we always talk about location, location, and I think we do that because 80% of that does the heavy lifting. So I think supply and demand is one of those critical fundamentals that people look for.
Now, I bet you there's somebody listening to this, Brett, who's saying, mate, you're wrong. Look at regional Australia. There's more demand for regional Australia than there is supply. And the answer is yes. A small group of people are leaving the big smoke going to regional Australia because they can work from home more, because they can work more flexible hours, because they want to get away from COVID. And so in the short term, that actually creates rising property values. And actually, for the first part of this year, regional Australia outperformed overall capital city markets, even though there were obviously pockets of regional Australia that didn't perform at all and strong areas of growth in capital cities. The thing is, Brett, when three or four people decide to go to a small country town, there isn't actually extra spare properties there. So that does create an imbalance of supply and demand in the short term. And it is hard for new builders. People aren't building a lot of new homes in some of these areas either. So I think while supply and demand is important, you've also got to have a look at future supply and demand and what's going to happen as well. And as you said, the big capital cities have got large-scale infrastructure projects, large-scale IT projects, hospitals, knowledge industries are building there. So that's going to create demand for people who are then going to create a demand for properties, and there's going to be a depth. Because in the future, when some of those people decide, hey, I'm not going to live in those country towns, where at the moment the supply and demand balance is the wrong way around, but when they say, hey, maybe this really wasn't for me after all, there may not be the depth of market behind. There's not going to be 100 people, first homeowners, established homeowners, upgraders, downgraders looking. So there's a little bit more to it than just supply and demand, isn't there?
There is, and that's a broader term. And clearly, many people look at those regional towns for that kind of appeal. But it's like an economy, Michael. You know, we only want to invest in economies where there's multiple pillars to the economy. We avoid the regional towns, the mining towns, the tourism focus and things like that. So I think you made a really valid point.
Sure. So I took you off track, but that's okay. You're used to me doing that. We were talked about what is it that home buyers look for, not always consciously, but sort of intuitively when they're looking for their own home, that sometimes they bypass. And in particular, I think at the moment with FOMO and people just trying to buy a property to get into the market, they're missing some of these fundamentals.
Yeah, look, the next one I think is, again, fairly obvious. And I sit with a lot of people and I ask them this question. You know, if you purchase the property today for $1 million, what part of the property is actually going to be rising in value? And look, almost 100% will obviously say the land, and that's obviously correct. But you know, understanding that it's the land that will be increasing in value is a critical fundamental. Also just pointing out, it's not the size of the land under the house, but rather the value of the land that we look for. And I've often heard you say before, Michael, I'd prefer to have a, you know, 100 square metres in a CBD than 1,000 hectares or whatever in the middle of Australia. So it is really that intrinsic land value. And look, it's very, very easy to work out with a house because we can work out what the land value is and the land component and kind of work out that land to asset ratio. But I think the other thing is it's also really, really important to understand that every property has an intrinsic land value, whether it's a house, a townhouse, or an apartment. And while it may be not an exact science to work out an apartment's land value, clearly if you're buying in an area where there's 300 apartments in a complex as opposed to an area where there's 10 apartments in the complex, that land component is going to be considerably higher. And I guess at the end of the day, Michael, the goal is to have your as much of your asset increasing in value. If you're buying a new house and land or you're buying a new asset that's depreciating, depreciation is beneficial, but that actually means the biggest part of your asset is actually losing value, which is against what we're trying to achieve here.
Well, that happens for people who tend to buy in the outer suburbs, where often the cost of the dwelling on the small block of land that they're now building in those outer suburbs is disproportionately high. But it's also that the land in those areas doesn't grow as much as land in the middle or inner ring suburbs, where there's more affluent people wanting to buy them. So not all land's created equal, is it?
No, certainly not. Certainly not.
Okay, what else do home buyers sort of intuitively look for?
Yeah, again, I think home buyers intuitively and instinctively, once they've got that location right, they've got the area, they're comfortable with the area and location, they're looking for a few more things. And I like to call it, you know, a bit like the icing on the cake. When you're making the icing on a cake, you've got certain ingredients. So the ingredients that homeowners tend to work towards and gravitate towards. Again, we've talked about the importance of community, the top schools, the hospitals, the universities, those real strong lifestyle precincts and walkabilities, and also the public transport options and infrastructure getting in and around our locations and our capitals. I know some people will come to us, Michael, and you hear it all the time, that such and such a place is getting a new train or a new university or a new hospital. Look, that's fine, but it's got to have all those ingredients together to make it up. It's not just one or the other. And I think sometimes this can take home buyers off track when they're thinking from an investment perspective, because they think it's a bit of a magic pudding that that one of those is going to come into an area and establish an area.
Sure. Neighbourhoods also become very much more important over the last couple of years. It always has been, but COVID's emphasize that as well. So I think what you're saying is right. People are wanting to invest. They keep asking, should I invest in Western Sydney because a new airport's coming? No, planes don't rent properties from you. Nobody wants to live under those runways anyway. So it's actually, you need multiple drivers and multiple factors drawing people to the market. We know what's happened to certain segments of the market recently when COVID hit it, or 10 years ago when the mining town boom finished. So yes, you're looking for all those things. And while they're the icing on the cake, they make a big difference, don't they?
They definitely do. And I just think, as an investor, for some reason, these types of people make exceptions. They're okay with, compromising. But I can guarantee you, as a home buyer, they want everything. They want their cake and eat it too, as they say.
Sure. Interestingly, we help a lot of home buyers at Metropole, not just investors. And I know one of the things your team does when we sit down with them is to make a list of what the must-haves are. And not everyone wants to be in a school zone. Not everybody needs to be in a particular location. But we also get them to make a list of things that they should not be or are not important. So there's the must-haves, there's the like-to-haves, and there's the things that they don't want. And that makes it easier for our buyer's agents, when we help them buy a home, sort out the wheat from the chaff.
Definitely. And look, I also think in some cases, Michael, we actually protect those home buyers from themselves. I think Brisbane's a great example of that, and I know there's other constraints in other locations, but, I know as a homeowner myself, I'd never buy on a main road or live backing onto a train line or anything like that. And I think the vast majority of people probably wouldn't do that either.
Well, they're not as home buyers, but as investors, this year in particular, we've seen them compromise their standards, haven't we?
We have. And, again, I guess your job as an investor is to create as much demand for that particular property as possible. If you're getting 10 people to an open home, you want 10 people to buy that property or rent that property. And if you're on a main road or a train line or you're in a flooded area, you're reducing your demand because certain people won't do that. And that's the opposite of what we're trying to do if we get back to the original fundamental of supply and demand. So in short, you want to have as many people wanting to buy that property as possible and keeping demand high. And if you're buying on main roads and flooded areas, and you're probably ruling out a lot of your market, whether it be another buyer or even a tenant, and that's going to restrict your wealth creation in the future.
Sure. Would you live in a small pokey apartment? Would you buy it for your home if your bedroom didn't even have a window, if there was no room to swing a cat, even though I'm probably not allowed to say that because you're not allowed to swing cats, the RSPCA will be after me, or if it didn't have a usable balcony that you can enjoy? So the answer is no, as a home buyer, you wouldn't. Why do investors do that? Why would they think somebody else would want to live in there? And the answer is because they see it's cheap. They get sidetracked by the tax benefits, the depreciation benefits, maybe a rental guarantee to start with. Not the right way to look at things, is it, Brett?
Definitely not. You know, and I think that's the common reason why they do follow those fundamentals for their home. They get emotional. They're not willing to compromise. You know, they might move out a suburb or they might change a few things, but they're not willing to, you know, downsize or buy on main roads or flooded areas. But as investors, when the focus is on a cash flow or on a, you know, a depreciation or just like you said, Michael, at the moment, you know, fear of missing out and doing anything to get in the market just so they're in the market, it really starts to create problems. And sometimes those problems can't be seen for another 5 or 10 years when the market's really, really substantially underperformed.
So as you said at the beginning, you actually should buy your investments looking through the eyes of a home buyer. Another reason, of course, is that you want a property that's attractive to home buyers. So if you ever chose to sell it, there'd be a huge depth of people wanting to buy it. But even if you're never going to sell it, that home buyers are buying other properties similar to yours to push up the values. And I guess that's what we said right at the beginning, when you sit with clients, and that's part of your job at Metropole, our job is to protect them. So it's not just to buy them a property, but protect them from making the mistakes, fix the errors they've made. So if you've bought a dud property, it's sometimes hard to know, should you sell, shouldn't you sell? Do you just hold on and hope it's going to go up in value? So that's why when we do a strategic plan, we run all those numbers and figures and spreadsheets and show what the cost is and when the crossover time is, because there are going to be some costs. You take a couple of steps backwards to move a step forward, and we help improve the returns. So if somebody's interested in gaining the benefit of your many years of experience as a property investor and as a director of Metropole, you'd be happy to have a chat with them, would you, Brett?
Yeah, certainly. I think even people who are looking to move forward, Michael, I sit with a lot of people who do have 3, 4, or 5 properties and they've achieved a good level of wealth, but they're wanting to get to the next level. And to get to that next level, you're going to have to do things differently. And in many cases, perhaps it's to take a step sideways or maybe sometimes a step back, but we've got to be able to sit and work that. And it's important we make those decisions now rather than 5 or 10 years, so you can really benefit from those outcomes.
I think over the last year or so, the rising market, the booming market, has really covered up a lot of mistakes. Unfortunately, once we get through this cycle, and it's not going to happen so soon, but in the next year, 18 months, some people are going to find they're stuck with the wrong property, and that's not going to be a great position to be in when we move to the next more flat stage of the cycle. So, Brett, if people want to get to speak to you, go to metropole.com.au, find out about our range of services, and it all starts by helping you put a plan together to, I guess, plan to become the person you plan to become. Thanks for your time, Brett. Look forward to chatting with you again real soon.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be with you.
I hope you got some benefit from the two sessions today, learning a bit about money management and about why some properties perform better than others. And if you did, and you know somebody else would get some benefit, please do me a favour and tell somebody about the Michael Yardney podcast. When you do, you'll be helping them along their financial journey, and that's my aim, to make as many people as financially fluent as possible. Of course, you can tell the world by leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. Now, I'll be back again real soon, but you can catch me in between these regular shows on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney, or why not join my private Facebook group? Go to Facebook and look for the Property Update private Facebook group. I'll be back again real soon, but in the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?